This is KUNC's Colorado Edition. I'm Erin O'Toole.
And I'm Brian Larson. A ski class at a Colorado resort turned into a nightmare for a 12-year-old boy last year when he found himself hanging off of a chairlift.
When you're holding on, what were you thinking the whole time?
Will I die? Most of the time was, will I die or will I make it?
We'll bring you a KUNC special investigation into ski resort safety and the legal ramifications for those who do get injured.
Plus, we'll dive into the debate at the state capitol over Colorado's oil and gas regulations.
But first, Colorado State Patrol troopers laid one of their own to rest Thursday morning in Longmont. Corporal Dan Groves was struck by a car as he was helping a stranded driver during the bomb cyclone blizzard that hit Colorado.
As KUNC's Matt Bloom reports, the service in Longmont comes as law enforcement agencies grapple with the growing difficulty of conducting traffic stops on our increasingly busy roadways.
Several patrol cars are parked in front of the Colorado State Patrol office in Greeley, but the hood of one of them is covered in blue, red, and yellow flowers. Sergeant Philip Gurley points out the handwritten thank you notes tucked into the dashboard.
Yep, this is just people have been bringing this in for the last few days, different just tributes they want to do to honor Dan.
Last Wednesday, Corporal Dan Groves left the Greeley Dispatch Center around 10 a.m. It was the last time Gurley would see his friend.
A state trooper is dead, killed as he was trying to help a driver who slid off the road. This happened on I-76 near Roggen and Weld County.
Groves was an 11-year member of the force, and Gurley says he was held up as a model trooper.
He really took safety on the roadway very seriously, so I think this hits all of us very closely because if it can happen to him, we know that it could happen to any one of us.
The accident is still under investigation, but it brings up a perennial problem for the CSP and other agencies. The number of traffic accidents remains fairly constant each year, but the number of fatal collisions involving officers keeps going up.
More people are moving to Colorado, our economy's booming, and there are more people using our roadways, so there's more congestion. That's why we need to keep first responders safe.
Sam Cole is with the Colorado Department of Transportation's Traffic Safety Unit.
You know, they're investigating more crashes. You're more likely to see them along the side of the road. And if that happens, you need to slow down or move over a lane.
There's actually a state law requiring just that. It's called the Move Over Law, and it's been around since 2005. 2 years ago, then-Governor John Hickenlooper signed a bill increasing fines and the maximum jail time for offenders after another CSP trooper, Cody Donahue, was killed during a traffic stop. But most people still aren't aware of the law.
So that's why we are taking to social media and our digital message boards that are on our roadways to help increase awareness of the law in order to protect troopers as they work on the side of the road.
The Colorado State Patrol will also increase its efforts to enforce the law following last week's blizzard and the death of Corporal Dan Groves. Sergeant Philip Gurley just wishes more people would heed travel warnings, especially during severe weather events.
I mean, most of us have sustained injuries. I've lost, Dan is my third friend and coworker that I've lost in my 15-year career with the State Patrol.
He and other troopers in Greeley were already going through a new traffic stop safety program before the accident.
You feel like you're standing downrange on a gun range where these bullets are flying by your head. Because any one of those cars, it doesn't matter if you're wearing your safety vest or your bulletproof vest, or even if you're in your car sometimes, the danger is so severe. A 5,000-pound car can do so much damage to you no matter what safety equipment you have.
Matt Bloom, KUNC.
Colorado Capitol, state lawmakers have unveiled a bipartisan proposal to spend more money on roads, public schools, and colleges. But voters would need to approve it first. Casey Becker is the Democratic Speaker of the House. She says removing the revenue cap set by the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, or TABOR, will allow the state to keep up to $1 billion that would otherwise go back to taxpayers over the next 3 years.
We don't think that this is going to be a solution to long-term needs in transportation and higher ed or K-12. But we think it's a really good first step.
The additional revenue would be divided equally among the three priorities. Republican Senator Kevin Priola is also sponsoring the bill. He says the state's roads are becoming unpleasant to drive on. Before the issue can go to the ballot, a majority of lawmakers in both chambers would have to endorse it.
Colorado lawmakers are locked in a contentious debate about the future of the state's oil and gas regulations. A bill that would give local governments more control over setback distances and drilling operations has passed in the Senate, and it's cleared another major hurdle in a House committee. KUNC's Scott Franz has more.
The basement of the state capitol is ground zero for the opposition to new oil and gas regulations. Dozens of industry workers have gathered here twice this month to talk to lawmakers and protest the changes.
We know that oil and gas, at the present time, it touches every aspect of every American's life, unless you're living off the grid somewhere.
Douglas Bernero works for Crestone Peak Resources in Denver.
Most of the materials that you see, clothing, tires on your car. I mean, I could go on and on.
He's wearing a jacket with the company logo and sitting on a bench as he writes out his testimony opposing Senate Bill 181. Behind him, energy workers are handing out sandwiches and clipboards to anyone who wants to write out their concerns.
The fact that they're enabling more control over in local communities will possibly slow down our drilling and completion operations when we're already going to great lengths to be as safe as we can and be good stewards and good neighbors in the leases that we do drill.
Bernero's fear is shared by many Republican lawmakers, like Larry Liston, who represents Colorado Springs. He stopped by the oil and gas industry event to get a sandwich and a sticker that says, "I'm Colorado Oil and Gas."
At some point in time, if the heavy hand of government comes down so hard or makes it so hard or hard enough for the industry to do their business, they have options. You know, there's other states that have oil and gas, and the energy companies have finite budgets. So they can easily go to Wyoming, they can go to North Dakota, they can go to Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas.
Two floors above us, a long line is forming outside of the room where the House Energy and Environment Committee is about to weigh in on the bill. Roger Steen drove more than 150 miles from Rout County to support the proposed regulations.
The counties do have a minimal control over some of the surface issues. They really can't get into the difficult ones like noise control, odor control, air pollution, health effects.
The debate is clearly emotional for some. Erin Martinez is the first person to testify at the hearing. She's been at the focal point of this legislation.
And I headed up the stairs, and the dogs were scratching at the sliding glass door, so I turned right instead of left. And instantaneously, when I opened that sliding glass door, I was blown about 20 feet in the air, and then I was trapped in the debris.
Martinez is talking about the day her home in Firestone was destroyed by a gas explosion in 2017. The blast killed her husband and brother. She spent more than 2 months in the hospital.
And my son saw me in the hospital, and I can't imagine how horrifying that was. I had collapsed lungs, so I was on a ventilator. I had chest tubes coming in and out of me that were pulling blood in and out. I had a feeding tube, and I was wrapped head to toe in garments and stuff because I was burned on 40% of my body.
Investigators blamed the explosion on a leaking flow line from a nearby well that had been abandoned. But opponents like Larry Liston wonder why lawmakers are focusing so much on the industry.
To take a bill like this and, you know, make a significant demands on the industry for for a pretty isolated incident. So I'm not downplaying it. Nobody is, but you know, we have industries in the construction industry or the airline industry or the automotive industry. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, the ski industry. Look how many people get killed skiing. You know, and you know, we don't shut down the ski industry.
Despite protests, Democrats are using their majority to advance the bill. After 12 hours of testimony on Monday, it moved out of the House Energy and Environment Committee. Mike Wiseman was one of the yes votes.
We are providing that a local government may have some authority that has for decades been taken away from it, only if they want to, because that is what local control means.
The bill has two more committee hearings to clear before it heads to the House floor for a final series of debates. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
Officially into spring now, but a lot of Colorado ski resorts stay open through the season and even into early summer.
So much snow this winter has been great for skiers and riders, but it could put a damper on hiking, especially in the Aspen area.
No.
The U.S. Forest Service says some trails there might not open until well into the summer, if at all, because of heavy snowpack and debris from avalanches.
One of the biggest question marks is Conundrum Trail, which was buried by a massive slide, leaving the trailhead under about 40 feet of snow. 40 feet. Forest Service officials expect to make a decision very soon on the trail status for the summer.
Now, we don't want to dampen any enthusiasm for skiing, but our last story is pretty eye-opening. If you're injured at a Colorado ski resort and think the resort was responsible, you might find it difficult to bring a case to court.
After a 6-year-old girl fell out of a chairlift at Eldora Mountain Resort last month, a group of moms in Boulder launched an online petition demanding safety improvements. Nearly 1,000 people signed it, and the resort said it would review its safety practices. This was happening as KUNC's Michael DeJuana was looking into ski resort safety, and he joins us now. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Erin.
Okay, now it's purely coincidental that you were already digging into this issue. But as it turns out, you discovered these types of falls are more frequent than anyone really knows.
They are. Also, safety information isn't readily available to the public, but it's exactly what the moms who started the petition wanted to know, like how many other children fell from chairlifts at Eldora. In a statement, the resort told moms like Lee Fisk that chairlift falls are, quote, extremely rare. And here she is relaying what she heard.
We basically stand by our public statement that says we're reviewing all of our policies. And this was rare. But the problem with that, of course, is, well, yeah, A, we don't know how rare it was because we can't get the data.
There were two other chairlift injuries at Eldora, both in 2015, and one of those involved a child. To get that information and other chairlift injuries around the state, I filed an Open Records Act request with the agency that regulates chairlifts. That's the Colorado Passenger Tramway Safety Board.
And you learned that you were asking a lot of the same questions as the moms.
Right. Not only why people fall, but what, if anything, is being done to prevent them from happening. My big takeaway, when people fall, the state doesn't require a rigorous investigation unless a mechanical issue is suspected as the cause. But in the vast majority of cases, resorts found passengers were at fault. That was the case with 12-year-old Jacob Keeping of Castle Rock.
I was like that.
I found him through state incident reports that I requested.
Your butt was not on the chair.
No.
And you were holding onto the back of the chair to stay in.
Yeah.
He's showing me what happened last February when he fell from a chairlift at the Granby Ranch Resort. It was his first ever ski trip. And while taking classes, he says he never got seated right. But the lift just kept going up the slope.
When you were holding on, what were you thinking the whole time?
Will I die? Most of the time was, will I die or will I make it?
Another kid about his age was in the chair trying to help him, telling him to hang on.
I was yelling on the top of my lungs.
He was hoping someone would hear him and stop the lift.
When I dropped, I thought I was dead.
Jacob has never told his story before, but if it sounds familiar, That's because it is.
A 9-year-old boy was taken to the hospital after falling 31 feet from a chairlift at the Aspen Highlands.
That's another boy who made headlines about a month ago. Then there was this story from 2016.
Next tonight, the deadly fall at a ski resort outside Denver. A mother killed, her two daughters hurt, plunging 25 feet from their chairlift.
Kelly Huber died at the same resort where Jacob Keeping fell. Despite these incidents, the ski industry says chairlifts are overwhelmingly safe. Dave Bird is with the National Ski Areas Association in Lakewood.
We have analyzed the data for decades now, and we've concluded that riding a chairlift, you're five times more safe than riding an elevator in terms of fatality data.
Bird's group represents hundreds of resorts around the country. Since 1973, he says 13 deaths have been caused by chairlifts. That's out of more than 17 billion riders. In the case of Huber, state inspectors concluded rapidly changing rope speed caused the chair to swing and strike a tower.
Prior to Granby Ranch, we had not had a fatality from a chairlift malfunction since 1993.
But what about cases like Jacob Keeping's, when the equipment isn't to blame? In the spreadsheet I got from the State Tramway Board, there was a column labeled injury. The data is from 2013 to 2018, and I counted 82 incidents at Colorado resorts. 74 were for people who slipped or fell out of chairlifts, and about a third of them were kids, like Jacob Keeping.
Have you seen your incident?
No.
You want to see it?
Sure.
Yeah, I would like to.
Here's Jacob's mom, Amy.
When you reached out, I was like, there's an incident report? I didn't know that.
And then it says 8-year-old male slipped.
Which is funny because he was 11 at the time.
Okay, 11 at the time.
Yeah.
Wait, why'd they say 8?
The 2-page report written by the resort and sent to the tramway board says, to the best of our knowledge, the child turned sideways on the carrier to look behind and then slipped and fell to the ground. These forms do not include a section for input from the injured party. The Keepings felt operators were not paying attention to help him onto the lift.
Do you think it's fair for them to say in this report that it's skier error?
No, it was all of their fault, in my opinion.
Granby Ranch referred me to Colorado Ski Country USA, a trade association for the state. They did not return my request for comment about Jacob's case. And in almost all the cases I reviewed, skier error was cited as the cause, even for children as young as 3 years old. Again, Dave Bird with the National Ski Areas Association.
There is a consistency of human error. And which is why we as an industry and individual skier is focus on guest education in loading, riding, and unloading chairlifts.
Bird cites a line from the longstanding ski responsibility code that says people must know how to use lifts safely. But for parents like Larissa Wilder, the code goes too far. She's one of the Boulder moms who helped launch the petition asking for safety improvements at the Eldora Resort.
There is an operator, and I am completely at the mercy of that operator.
She and others interviewed for this story said kids should receive extra attention when getting on and riding chairlifts.
If that operator would have appropriately loaded that child, scooped her from behind, and had been paying attention to everybody screaming, it was clear she was never loaded, this incident would have happened.
Eldora officials declined to be interviewed, but in an email said they're reviewing their policies. That left the Boulder Moms group wondering what exactly would be done and how they would know if hazards had been eliminated. And there are a lot of questions for all resorts. Like, some chairlifts don't have restraint bars. And for the ones that do, state law doesn't require their use. Children can ride the lifts alone. I wanted the Colorado Passenger Tramway Safety Board to address these issues. But in an email, they said their focus is limited to the structure and mechanics of the lifts. And they declined my requests for an interview.
Michael, I want to come back to Jacob Keeping and his mom, Amy, for a moment. A year has passed since his fall. How's he doing now?
Jacob was lucky. He was only bloodied and bruised after his fall, and it could have been a lot worse. But he still has a lingering issue, severe anxiety. And all told, the family incurred about $5,000 in medical and therapy costs. And his mom, Amy, even explored the idea of going to court to recover those costs.
Both lawyers that I reached out to told me because I had signed the waiver at the ski school that they were totally in the clear. There was nothing they could go after them for.
And that's another big issue I found in my investigation. Some say skiers and snowboarders have little legal recourse if they're seriously injured at a Colorado resort. More than 7 million people hit the slopes in Colorado during the past season. With a number that high, there's sure to be injuries. And nobody knows that better than Denver lawyers Trent Ongert and Joseph Block. They've taken on hundreds of injury cases over the years, and from their view, there's just one problem.
My ski pass for the day, the back of the lift ticket says you can't sue us.
That's Block, and this is Ongert.
If Skiery is negligent, you should be able to sue them.
Skiers and snowboarders are already legally responsible for the inherent risks of the sport. But because courts have allowed it, some resorts also tack on waivers known as exculpatory clauses. Block says it adds up to some ironclad fine print.
That says basically, if we kill you through the fault of one of our employees, you can't sue us. You know, injury, death. And if you do sue us, you have to indemnify us for all our attorney fees and costs in having to defend the lawsuit.
I interviewed a dozen people about ski resort injuries for this investigation, including Chris Arness of Steamboat Springs.
My dad owned a ski area. I've been skiing since I was 2 years old.
But 4 years ago, he was paralyzed in a crash at the local resort. He says he approached an area where barriers had been removed, leaving a treacherous, deep imprint in the snow.
So I didn't see the rut until split second. Tried to suck it up, the rut, and then my ski got popped off due to the impact of hitting it. And I went into a forward dive and basically landed on my head.
Lauren Kasten is a spokesperson for Steamboat Resort. She said the incident happened after hours when the resort is
removing barriers so that our grooming machines can prepare the slopes for the next day and make the mountain safe.
Arness maintains they had a responsibility in his crash. He wanted to take a case to court, but lawyers advised him against it.
They said there's no way they could win a case or even have a judge give you a case.
That was a common theme among people I spoke with. And lawyers like Block and Ongert say the exculpatory clauses, combined with the Colorado Ski Safety Act, can let resorts off the hook for injuries.
Skiing and snowboarding safety is everyone's responsibility. But most importantly, you are personally responsible for your actions.
The ski industry emphasizes what's called your responsibility code. This video, produced by the National Ski Areas Association in Lakewood, drives home that point.
In fact, your responsibility code has been inserted into many state statutes and laws regulating ski safety. Always show courtesy to others and be aware that there are elements.
They have a skier safety responsibility code, but there's no ski area safety responsibility code.
Dan Gregory is president of the Snow Sport Safety Foundation. It's a nonprofit based in California that he founded after investigating the snowboarding death of his daughter in 2006. Skiers accept a lot of risks, he says, but it's a one-way proposition because resorts don't have to say what changes, if any, they've made, even after serious injuries and deaths.
They don't say anything about what they are doing to protect to the greatest extent possible people from unnecessary injuries and accidents. The focus on safety is a shift of the focus.
But the message from the National Ski Areas Association is resorts are focused on safety. Dave Bird is director of risk and regulatory affairs.
The rate of catastrophic injuries per 1 million skier visit remains below 1 in 1 million.
In the most recent ski season, the association says there were just 37 catastrophic injuries at resorts across the country.
Which we define as a broken back, a broken neck, a life-altering head injury, paralysis, paraplegic, that sort of thing.
Bird couldn't break down those numbers for the state, nor could Trade Association Colorado Ski Country USA. But of course, there are other injuries that are less than catastrophic.
Well, the individual ski patrols at skiers are tracking those and analyzing them. Everything from a slip and fall in a parking lot to a cocoa burn in the lodge, to sunstroke, to a torn ACL.
Do any of the resorts publish those statistics?
No, not that I'm aware of. And I think that there's good reason that they don't. The range of injuries isn't going to tell you much. You'd have to put it into context with their individual skier visits, and that's a closely held marketing, Eagle Mountain ski area, a hypothetical ski area, doesn't want its competitors to know how many skier visits they had.
That means there's no comprehensive public data to determine how many people are injured and the type of injuries they sustained. So I turned to the State Department of Public Health and Environment.
Vital Statistics, this is Kirk Bohl speaking.
While Bohl doesn't have access to resort-specific data, he does have information on all kinds of ski and snowboard injuries in Colorado. It's in a little-known, massive hospital insurance claims spreadsheet.
Fall from skiing, fall from snowboarding, or hitting a tree while skiing or snowboarding, those types of things, or at least a collision of some form.
In 2017, there were 5,660 emergency department visits related to skiing or snowboarding, and 597 hospital discharges. There are limits to the statistics. They don't tell us how many injuries were linked to resorts. But for Dan Gregory, it's an indication that the 37 catastrophic injuries reported to the National Ski Areas Association in roughly the same time frame is not a reliable measure of safety.
It's in the interest of the ski resorts to play down the accident and injury risk at ski resorts.
In an email, Dave Bird questioned the reliability of the hospital data for scientific analysis, saying a better source are peer-reviewed epidemiological studies based on reports from representative ski areas. But those studies are conducted once a decade. Gregory, who is also a physician, says hospital injury information helps shed light on the risks skiers and snowboarders face.
If a patient has to be admitted to the hospital in today's world because of an injury, that's a serious injury. We don't admit people for minor things, and people go to emergency rooms usually for fairly serious injuries.
As for the health department, it has no specific program or initiative around the hospital data. In other words, the information is just sitting there.
It's also a public safety risk that public policymakers are not aware of because the data is not out there for them to be made aware of it.
He thinks resorts should be required to file public plans that include details about injuries and what's being done to prevent them. Right now, Gregory is pushing for legislation in Maine to do that.
What about the other people you interviewed? How do they feel about making injury information more accessible?
The idea resonates with the Boulder Moms group and lawyer Joseph Block.
If you were there with your little kid and knew that at 3 o'clock by chair 5 going on this slope, you have an 80% chance of getting whacked by a skier, wouldn't you take another trail down? I mean, yeah, you would.
You don't just get to say family-friendly and have that mean nothing.
That's mom Lee Fisk, who got involved with ski safety after a 6-year-old girl fell from a chairlift last month at Eldora. She'd like to see resorts publish injury information in the same way that schools publicly track achievement.
Yes, ratings are not everything. It's the same for hospitals. There's nuance there. But in general, if you want to market yourself, for instance, as a family-friendly resort, you should have to back that up.
And those moms, well, they've only started. They're looking beyond Eldora and reaching out to state lawmakers with tough questions about what they will do to assure families at Colorado's resorts are as safe as they can be.
All right, thanks.
My pleasure.
That's KUNC's Michael DeJuana. He investigated what the public knows and doesn't know about ski resort safety. This has been Colorado Edition, made possible with support from our KUNC members. If you enjoy listening and you're not a member, you can make a gift to support our work anytime at KUNC.org. Our show this week was produced by me, Erin O'Toole.
And me, Brian Larson. News director Catherine Welch contributed to our show, along with editor Jackie High, who manages digital. Our intro music is Remember Me by Colorado musician Kalatana.
We also heard Robbie Reverb with Bling Bong, and other music in this episode was provided by Blue Dot Sessions.
If you like what you're hearing, make sure you don't miss an episode. You can subscribe to Colorado Edition at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
And join us next Sunday evening at 9 on KUNC.